The Wicked Chops podcast is brought to you by Rise Poker. Visit risepoker.com today and learn how you can win a seat into the WSOP main event.
Ever find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Now tuned into the greatest. Turn the music up in the headphones. Tim, you can go and brush your shoulders off.
Chops here. It has been a long time, too long, since our last Wicked Chops podcast. It's pre-4:15, Black Friday. Why's it got to be black? The events that shook the poker world. But here we are. We're back. A really interesting podcast. I wanted to take a different perspective on this and reach out to some friends on the European side of the industry. Kim Lund and Ben Fried join me. So, for our listeners who might not be familiar with you guys or your backgrounds, why don't you give them a quick, brief overview, starting with you, Ben?
Thanks, Jobs. I started in the industry back in 2002 for a big European company called Betfair. I started their poker room, grew it to be one of the leading rooms in the UK and Europe. Moved from our own pokers, from a poker network to our own poker software, and that was five hard years, and then left Betfair and set up my own consultancy called Gaming Edge Associates, and we advise European operators on gaming strategy, whether it be poker, casino, sports, and even bingo now, and a lot of social stuff. So, yeah, that's my background.
Great. And Kim? With Infinite Edge Gaming, give a little bit of your industry background.
Very similar story to Ben's, except for I worked for Poker Room, and after it was bought by Bwin, I worked for Bwin. I also had a couple of years at On Game Network, so sort of the business-to-business side of that company, selling poker software and poker access to poker networks. Also I left the industry end of last summer, and I'm also now working as a consultant. Smaller scale than Ben, but I'm working to catch up.
It's coming after you, Ben. So let's talk about the Full Tilt saga, the drama bomb that is everything going on in the tilt world. As our listeners know, the AGCC shut them down. Kim, it's actually something that you're the first person I saw write about it or speculate about it. Did you have any inside contacts there that were telling you that the revoking of the license was a possibility, or is this something that just based on your experience in the industry you thought was a real possibility?
I don't know what would be coolest, but the answer is the latter. I just, from my gut feeling, was that was the only logical outcome. Had I been any of the other licensees, I'd be pressuring. So, looking at the other, I don't know if they have, but looking at who else they have on license over there, I just felt that had to be the only option. They would have disqualified themselves from the UK whitelist and everything else otherwise. So I was surprised. I was the first one and only one to make it that clear.
Do you think if they had been able to pay back player funds, which means that they would have actually segregated their player funds from their operational funds, but had they been able to do that, then they would still have their license today?
I'd be careful at speculating too much, since it's completely unclear why they suddenly decided to do what they did, and you know, clauses, you know, take advantage of all the clauses they had to do it immediately. So, without knowing the exact reasons why, but obviously, if they had not done that thing, which to me was
right, Ben?
Sorry, I was...
Yeah, I think it's...
It's okay. Ben, what were you hearing anything? Were you hearing any rumblings that this was a possibility?
No, I didn't hear any rumblings that it was a possibility. I mean, I agree with Kim. It's very difficult to speculate on what regulators are going to do. There's no inside noise normally. They're impenetrable organizations.
Right.
I mean, for all we know, it might be the US DOJ that was applying pressure. You know, Alderney, for those in the US that don't know, is a very strict jurisdiction. Arguably, it's not like a Costa Rica or a Kanawaki or a kind of Caribbean island. They have some serious other licensees, as Kim mentioned, to maintain a relationship with the likes of PKR, Intraction, that have just been bought by IGT, and a few others. So, you know, they've got a reputation to maintain, and as Kim said, they would be blacklisted and not be able to support those licensees if they didn't. I mean, I'm on reflection and on hindsight, I'm surprised it actually took them so long.
Yeah. What, before this happened, what was the general market perception of Full Tilt in Europe? You know, they were as big as it could get here, you know, only second to Poker Stars, and, you know, pretty well respected. Just because of the roster of pros and the amount of television content they were pumping out, but were they as highly regarded in Europe as they are in the States? Ben?
I mean, from...
Go
ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, Chops. They're very similar brand strength over here. The roster of pros, the same programming, and also European-specific programming.
Right.
They had a strong Euro connection with Gus and with Patrick. You know, very similar to the States. Them and Stars, out-and-out leaders from a player point of view. From an industry point of view, I guess most people within the industry kind of envied their brand. I was in countless marketing meetings whereby we tried to say, well, how can we capture what they've done and use it for our own benefit? And because they had that roster, it was impossible. So, you know, out-and-out leaders, though, the general perception was that they were a very, very slick organization.
How about you, Kim? What did you hear, or what did you understand the perception to be?
No, I mean, it's what Ben says. I mean, I think the only sort of fly in the ointment was when the markets in Europe started to regulate, first Italy, or you could maybe count UK as well, but Italy and France, they ignored Italy completely, and they were very slow moving into France. And then I know I wrote something way back basically saying that to me was an indication that they loved playing the .com game, but all this hassle with you know, regulation and having to deal with all sorts of different requirements they simply weren't up to. So I had this speculation that they would play their game as long as they could, and it all sort of fragmented and became individual markets. They just pack up and say, you know, congratulate themselves on a good run. I think that was a very incorrect statement to make, but I think that's been their only sort of fly in the ointment. They didn't seem eager on or have the sort of the dedication needed to play in those local markets. I mean, they're nowhere in Italy, and in France they're very small, and also apparently didn't abide by all the rules.
What did people...
I think what's also different... Sorry, Chops. What's also a bit different about them, and maybe is different from the US, is that they only do poker.
Right.
Most companies in Europe lead with sports, and they have casino, and they have bingo. Stars and Tilt are very singular in the fact, and UB as well, that they are poker only. So that's a big difference between the US and Europe.
Okay, so the brand definitely was well regarded in Europe, but how about the executive leadership, in particular Ray Bittar? You know, stateside, he's somebody that we were always somewhat surprised had risen to a level of prominence organizationally within Full Tilt. And, you know, part of the reasons why we were surprised have certainly played themselves out as more information about the Tilt situation becomes public knowledge. But is he somebody that either of you guys had any real interactions with over the last few years?
Not me. I have never had any personal interaction with him.
Okay.
I can only admit to when I answered the Bluff Power 20 thing back in January, and I saw his name. I think I asked someone, "Who's that?" the coin dropped eventually, but my initial reaction was, "Who's that guy?" He's been.
That's
in shadows, as far as I.
Yeah, that's the funny thing with that, Kim, is I know a number of people who included them on their Power 20, but only put them at number 20, just as kind of like as an FU for, like, yeah, we'll put you on this list, but we're going to put you really, really low on this list, just so you know that, you know, it's almost better to be left off than to be, when you're in a position at least as he was, than to be put on as number 20. And then the guy that was running things before you is on the cover at number one. But
that, it's interesting, the industry-wise over here at any rate, that PokerStars and Full Tilt are always the elephants in the room because they never have any representation at conferences. So no one really knew who Robitar was, or I'm guessing everyone knows who he is now, though.
Yeah, they do now, for sure. So after Black Friday, after 4:15, what was first? Actually, let's go broader. What was the European reaction, starting with you, Ben, to the news of the DOJ indictments? Was this something that you guys were surprised about? Upset that America was, you know, seemingly this archaic in our thinking? What was your general reaction and your colleagues' reaction?
Shock, annoyance that it happened late on a Friday night, because that meant that a lot of us had to keep on top of it and work the weekend. Being honest,
right.
It was a surprise. I mean, from not having worked directly looking after players for a long time, it was a surprise to me that it'd come. But it was always something, I think, from a European whiter than white operator like Betfair or Fongame like Kim worked for, I think it was pleasing to some degree that companies that had flouted what we regarded, or our companies regarded as a kind of law, had finally, those companies had met their comeuppance.
Right.
So what a lot of US poker players don't realise, and I guess they have no reason to realise, is that poker rooms in Europe have been fighting in an uneven battle for many, many years since UIGA.
Right.
PokerStars, Tilt have been making huge revenue from the US and ploughing that money into marketing spend in Europe. And it's made it very difficult to compete on those terms in Europe. So need to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on poker programming. You know, my budget for the year wasn't much more than that. So, running a reasonably sized European room. So, you know, in one sense, from an industry point of view, it's reset the balance. Shares in European listed poker rooms went up, and I think it's now kind of breathed life back into what was a kind of losing battle for a lot of marketing people in poker in Europe. So. Unfortunately, while I realize that doesn't help the U.S. player, it's been seen positively in Europe.
Yeah, I would imagine, you, Ben, with your background at Betfair, and then, you know, Kim with Poker Room, that maybe that there, maybe not necessarily animosity, but there's probably a little bit of frustration at how much Stars and Tilt were able to thrive while, you know, you guys operated what you felt like was by the rules. Is that correct?
I mean, I think I was fairly open when I tweeted like justice right away, because that's what I felt.
Right.
I mean, the day when we walked into the office of Poker Room and, you know, in 24 hours, there went our business. There went all our U.S. players, and we were very U.S. oriented, not just in in what type of players we had, but also in the type of strategy we had, the type of brand we had. It was a fairly mature approach, so all that just went down the drain, and we had to sort of restart and start from scratch. And then all throughout the years, I've been hearing whispers that, you know, it will turn out to have been the right thing to do. It will turn out to be the right thing to do. People have been, from all angles, have been telling me, you just wait, it will happen. And then it happened when basically all of us have decided, well, it will never happen.
Yeah, and I would imagine...
Because casinos involved, now it's too late, and then boom.
Yeah, I would imagine with all the news about the Wynn Stars partnership, the Full Tilt Station Casinos partnership, that there must have been almost a, as you're kind of describing it, Kim, a defeatist, holy crap, they really did get away. I don't want to say get away with it. I mean, we've always felt like those were still a lot of gray area in those laws, but... you know, the way that it ended up going down and, you know, the alleged money laundering and bank fraud, expedited the process to make sure that they were going to get kicked out and they were not going to be able to get their license from the DOJ. Let's talk about after April 15th, general European market perception. Did the market still feel, you know, Stars took care of it pretty quickly. Within days, they had it handled. So there probably wasn't much of a hiccup there. But did European players feel like their money was safe on Full Tilt? Kim?
My opinion?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, dumb as it sounds now, I mean, I think I said something yesterday that I write on Twitter or in my blog that I believe their license will be canceled, but I don't even, you know, I didn't even clean up my own account.
Right. So,
it was nothing, but it was just the act of it. It's like, how can I write that and still think that it's okay?
Right.
I don't know. I think actually the move yesterday was in like an equal surprise, although it shouldn't have been.
Right.
It's strange. Yeah. I think it's because things in general over in Europe has been run in a more sort of clean way, if you like. We've come further in the regulation process, so you've sort of gotten used to not all of these shenanigans that, you know, have occurred on the other side.
I know that I'm a little less familiar on how you guys have been able to be more progressive in your gaming laws. I know it usually goes country by country in Europe, but was this ever a legal battle that you were facing in Europe where, let's say, 1999, you had to get these laws passed? When was it blessed as this is a legal enterprise that you can run in Europe? Ben, start with you.
Well, betting and luckily for us in the UK, and I can talk about that more because I'm a UK resident. I mean, we're brought up with betting shops on the corner. It's a
right.
It's a way of life here.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible, but you know, we like to have a flutter, and it's been regulated for a long time, and I think the UK has been quite progressive when it comes to regulation and licensing. They obviously want to put in place player protection and corporate social responsibility and underage responsibility type things and kind of restrictions on overt marketing. I think, and Kim, you're going to correct me, but I think the UK changed or updated its law in about 2004, 2006. And they keep looking at it. I don't think we're the most progressive. I think Denmark is known to be coming out with laws soon which are leading. And as you've mentioned, it seems to be country by country, which in itself in Europe is causing some problems. But I'll revert to Kim because he's more of an expert in European than I.
Yeah, and I hesitate to say too much on such a complex topic as well, but I mean, I think it's important to point out there's no such thing as some kind of general acceptance of running a gaming site, even in Europe. I mean, it's It is regulated in Italy, for example, and in France and in the UK. And other countries are Denmark is on the way, Spain's on the way, Greece is on the way. They all have different approaches to it. But if, for example, in Sweden, we still have a monopoly in place. In Norway, there have been a lot of legal actions against gaming instead of for it. So it's not like the general legal landscape is completely clear. Right. And like Ben said, as soon as one country regulates, I mean, EU, a lot of EU directors will tell you that suddenly you can't even do that because you're supposed to have free trade and all of that. So it's almost, I mean, it's insanely messy over here as well, but we just found islands of havens that can sort of guide. I mean, as soon as Italy did it, you could really see suddenly all the other countries decided, well, maybe that wasn't such a bad thing. But I think the Italy initiative was really important to kick things off. They basically just decided they won.
And they make no bones.
They went ahead with it.
Make no bones about it. They're doing it for the tax dollar. I mean, and much as the US eventually will do it for the tax dollar, they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Well, they say they're doing it for player protection, etc. And I hope that they are. But really, truly, it's to raise money for the tax coffers.
Was this a big news story, Tilt losing their license? You know, ESPN covered it here, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, LA Times, all the major publications picked up on it. Is it getting a lot of attention in specifically maybe the UK press, Ben?
I haven't seen too. I mean, offline, I haven't seen it, to be honest. Online, definitely. I mean, it is quite big news. I mean, I think it's just so extremely rare that a regulator steps in, that's I think the kind of spin on it. I mean, it's frankly amazing that what's happened. I think I don't know what coverage it's getting in Europe. Ken.
Me neither. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's overly like. It's not front page news, to put it that way.
Okay. Yeah, the
especially also because it doesn't. I mean, in France, it doesn't touch France. It doesn't touch Italy. Their French license hasn't been revoked. They still have a license in France.
Okay.
Although they got a penalty or something. So it's.
So what do you think? What do you think is next for Full Tilt? There's been a lot of speculation that Jack Binion is saving the company, which we do not believe is happening. There's been a lot of speculation about a number of other potential buyers. We've heard about, or you know, I've written about the Phil Ivey White Knight situation. Kim, I know you've heard some rumblings. Maybe there was a chance before this license was revoked for them to pull off a deal, but now it feels like it's going to be really hard for them to do anything because it's a toxic asset that's lost its license and it's going to have to go through the licensing process again. Do you think that this is it? Do you think this is the end of Full Tilt?
Depends if you mean the end of Full Tilt the brand or the end of the Full Tilt brand under that management, under that ownership.
I'd say the end of the Full Tilt brand first, because I think their platform will, somebody's going to buy the platform. The platform will live on. But the Full Tilt brand, will we see Full Tilt Poker? Will you see Full Tilt Poker ads in Europe a year from now?
I think I have a pragmatic opinion. I think the old UB action, that scandal with the super user account, that showed how forgiving this industry is.
Sure.
I mean, so if those, I mean, they've done a good job of doing further damage to those brands later on, but they escaped that thing more or less, you know, unscathed from a brand's point of view. I mean, they could keep operating. So I think that forgiveness is sort of lies in the genes of players. So I mean, I don't think the brand necessarily is without value and completely, you know, ready to be scrapped. I don't know. I think it could be saved somehow. If it's worth it, that's a different question.
Yeah, Ben, what do you think?
I kind of think a bit differently. I guess there are, we always, because we work in industry or we work with players a lot, we seem to forget that 90% of players don't read forums, don't care that much. They're quite recreational players.
Right.
What's going to affect them for the last couple of days is, if they have indeed been active or playing, is that they can't log in, they can't see their money, they don't have that comfort. And from what I understand, Tilt haven't been communicating properly with the players. So, I don't know. I think the longer it goes on, and I heard that they're looking at Kanawaki as an alternative licensing route, if they can get it back online relatively soon, if that's possible, which I don't know, that's speculation, then they can save it to some degree. But I agree with Kim. I think, is it worth it? I don't know. The software, definitely, we can talk about, is valuable. But connected with the current brand now, I wouldn't be so sure long term about it. I don't think we'll see ads next year for Full Tilt in Europe.
Do you both agree that Full Tilt's got the best software platform out there?
No.
You do not think?
I don't think they do. my company.
No, if you're talking about
Kim, yeah.
Go on, Kim. You go, Kim.
I don't agree with that either. Platform is too wide a word.
Okay. How about their user interface? Go ahead. Let's start with.
Sorry. Go on.
Yeah. Start with Kim.
Okay. What was I going to say? Yeah. I mean, from a playability point of view, and maybe a user experience point of view, I rate it as number one.
Okay.
But if you look at platform, I think, I mean, there's elements of other platforms that are stronger.
Like whose?
In many regard, I mean, it's Ben will have a more sound opinion on this because this is exactly what he does. But I mean, I think in many regards, just looking at it from an outside, the PokerStars platform must definitely be very, very scalable compared to many other things out there. And it's reasonably flexible. They've been able to launch it in Italy and France without any major hiccups. So their platform is obviously good for many, many reasons. But I do hold Full Tilt 1 when it comes to playability and user experience. It's the funnest software out there. And I that to me is important.
What do you think, Ben?
So, well, we... it's not what I think. We actually created, my company, Gaming Edge, created a product called the Poker Edge Scorecard, which is an industry comparison of now the 17 leading poker softwares on the market. We refresh it every 6 months, and it compares the softwares by 13 different categories and over 250 different attributes. And it's amazing how close Stars and Tilt win out. So they're easily tied number one,
mm-hmm.
And they kind of jockey for position between one and two. And as Kim says, from a playability point of view, and from a persona, from a beginner's point of view, Full Tilt actually wins. But from an overall functionality, scalability, functionality in terms of really detailed tournament features and kind of depositing features, etc., and languages, then Stars wins hands down. You know, I think Stars is very much product led. The owner was a technical person. He has focused predominantly on product development and customer service. And I think Full Tilt have done an awesome job with the software and the brand. But I think it's the other areas that they've fallen a bit short of. Product-wise, very strong. But it's, you know, the other key thing with someone going out and looking at potentially purchasing software like this is it's not a platform, as Kim suggested. So you can't go out there and easily create liquidity on it,
right?
Because it's not skinnable, it's not a network. So I would imagine that would need quite a lot of work to get it into that fit state. So looking for potential buyers of the software would be restricted. You would have to have a big customer base to migrate onto it. So that limits the potential of buyers. And I know I've kind of rambled onto a different question probably.
Well, no, it's a good lead-in. You know, what it almost feels like the situation is to me now is you've got an asset. Full Tilt's got a couple of assets. They've got the software. They've got a pretty massive player database. What do you think that is worth now? Do you think the software itself is worth $50 million, $100 million, $150 million? We know that there's about $150 million that they need to pay back to U.S. players. Do you think the software itself is worth $150
million? I've said it. It's a weird question. Is it worth $150 million? Don't know. Do I think someone will be willing to pay? I mean, yes, I think so. It's basically, do I think the Intraction bid that IGT, I mean, what they paid for Intraction was worth it? No. But do I understand why they paid it? Sure.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, that depends on how you look at worth it. But it's... If I mean, I know that companies are scrambling behind the scenes, and $150 million, as weird as it may sound, for some of these companies isn't much money. So if they think it's worth $110 and they can get it for $150, I mean, whatever. I think it's in the long run, that's not where, I mean, if the right company comes along, I think that's probable. It's doable to get that.
Sure. Ben, what do you think?
I think it's possible. I think it's looking at that sort of money, $150 million's toppy. Don't get me wrong, I've already said it's fantastic software, and I'll stand by that. I think the difference between someone like IGT now and FTP is now the cloud that hangs over it. I mean, and
right.
Also... what are we buying here? If you just buy the software, are you buying the back office systems? Do you get the kind of infrastructure? And, you know, you need the team that built it, because if you don't get them, I mean, are they going to carry on working for you? So you're buying code that you don't necessarily have a team to manage or understand. And, you know, who knows how it's distributed around the world on different servers. So unless with that money you're buying the expertise as well, and, you know, maybe that sits in Chris Ferguson's head, who knows? I don't know, you'd be buying maybe a train wreck of a kind of a code base that you'd have to spend a year trying to understand before you can actually develop something new. That said, you know, it's still a lot better than the Intraction software. I mean, we rank Intraction as 15 out of 16 or 17, and Full Tilt as 1 or 2 out of 17. So it shows the gulf in class.
Sure. Are you hearing a lot of speculation regarding potential European buyers, be it existing gaming companies or individuals? Was that something before the license was revoked by the AGCC that you're hearing a lot about? Is there interest from a European buyer? Have you heard anything, Ben?
No, I've heard nothing. I mean, the only thing I heard was the Jack Binion story, and I heard that they were trying to find a buyer, but that's through a couple of different sources. It's, you know, my money wouldn't be if someone's going to buy it on a European operator.
You don't think it'll be a European operator?
No.
Kim, what do you... I know you've at least heard that they were kicking tires and trying to find people. Have you heard anything about, you know, Tilt reaching out to anybody?
I heard things, but they were very unreliable. So it's equal to not having heard anything. No, and I agree with Ben. Although I think there's some dark horse European candidates that wouldn't have considered it before what happened with the license, who might. I mean, I love to speculate. So, but no, I agree with Ben. I don't think it's a European operator that would be one of those potentially buying it for that kind of money.
Who should buy them? Who should buy them? I mean, we all agree that it's got, if nothing else, they've got really good software, good user interface, and a lot of customers in the database. Who should buy them right now?
A big offline U.S. casino. So Caesars, MGM, Wynn, Bally's maybe, Trump, I guess. But, it's still a risky approach, not knowing how U.S. regulation is going to pan out. But they're kind of maybe a big kind of brand in the U.S., but I'm still struggling to find who the right buyer is, but I can't see much outside of that group. And they have such big legal teams and kind of compliance teams that I can't see them making the jump to actually do it. So, maybe it's some South American oil magnate or something like that. I don't know.
Kim, what do you think?
I think it's important. Yeah, I think it's important to remember, keep in mind what Ben said before about it's Full Tilt has a software. It doesn't have the same type of business-to-business platform that some of the other suppliers have. And that means if the U.S. market starts going state by state instead of federal, then suddenly, you definitely probably need a software that is a platform that's easily run. You can clone it, you can take it to the next state and then the next again, and you can find customers all over that can run it more locally. So if that's what happens, then you're suddenly standing with a software that you have to do a lot of work on. If that doesn't happen and it's federal and you're basically just have a great opportunity to run something standalone by yourself, then the group of potential buyers that Ben mentioned are the obvious ones. But I don't think it will be an obvious one.
Okay. Let's end it with this. And this is pure speculation. It's your best educated guess. This point, summer 2012, Full Tilt is what? What are they? Do they even exist? Are they merged or swallowed up by U.S. Casino? Your best educated guess. Kim, let's start with you.
What do I have, 3 hours?
Yeah, 3 seconds.
Impossible question. I was about to say that Rape Guitar will be number one on that Power Top 20 list. impossible question.
If anything, I think Ray Bittar is going to be...
Not even I speculate that wildly.
Okay. Ben, are you willing to speculate?
Yes, why not? I think one of the casinos that we mentioned, the big guys, will have bought the software for a song because no one else will buy it, and they'll be developing on it behind closed doors. And I think that the customer database will have been sold to the highest bidder and will be basically used as a affiliate pathway to refund players, maybe. So, that 14% of the world's liquidity that has just gone off a cliff.
Right.
There's still value in that. They can still generate some conversion off that list and push players to whether it be Party or... different operators around the world and get good affiliate rates. So, they probably should do that and generate some kind of, whether it's buying more vehicles for Mr. Bittar or whether it's paying back US players, I don't know, but they should do something like that, I think, because that's the only value I see them getting out of that database.
Okay. Guys?
I guess if we can add something or have at least some kind of answer, I think if the willingness is there, I think that by that time there will have been an opportunity to pay that money back. That's not the same thing as saying that it will have happened, but I think the possibility will have been there.
Okay. Guys, thanks for taking the time. Kim, thanks for doing this on while driving from the in between borders in Sweden and Norway.
No problem.
Yeah. And Ben,
anything on the way.
And Ben, thank you as well. And we should reconnect on another podcast sometime soon on another big news item. So thank you guys for your time.
Sounds good, Jobs. Thank you.
Likewise, Jobs. Thank you.